Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe to scale your business, your tech must be configurable. And here to talk about that with me today is Luke. Luke is part of the founding team at Centura, out in London. Really excited to have this discussion with Luke today. We've had a previous chat about this, and he's super gifted in the product space. So really excited, Luke, to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Hi, Richard. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting me. You're too kind, calling me gifted.
You can pay me later, man. You can pay me later. But you are. That is the truth, folks. And you know, as we jump in, I always like to give everyone a bird's eye view as to where we're going in the conversation in the podcast today. And as everyone knows, we've all had that feeling. How great is it to be working in a fintech that is growing and the product is growing? It feels nice, right? Your backlog has endless features that need to be added to the product. But, you know, how do you support that plan? How do you support the demand? How do you support all the requirements? The product will have lots of different users at certain points of your scaling journey. And how do you make certain that your plan is aligned to the features that these users want? And also, you consider how to support some of the defects that have arisen during the process. All of this is vital to consider as you go along your scaling journey, because it's going to affect how you and your business grow. And today, obviously, Luke is here to chat with us about this. And I think let's sort of start at the top here, Luke. You know, product requirements, understanding how to shape and strategize your growth through product. What do you think are some of the crucial factors to consider as you plan and strategize your growth for your product?
Yeah, thanks, Richard. So I think on that first question around planning and strategizing how to grow your product, I think maybe we can, if you're okay with that, maybe we can start at outset.
Yeah.
How did we strategize to build a scalable platform? And then what are we doing now, currently, and looking forward to continue that scaling journey? So I think for us, we sort of split that into three key pillars. There's what are we doing technically to provide a platform that is scalable? What are we doing operationally? And what are we doing commercially? And on the technical side, so what are a few key sort of fundamental factors that need to be considered? And the first and most important for us is understanding, and this is throughout the life cycle of a fintech business, understanding the life cycle of the various layers of the platform. So to give you a bit of background about Centura, we're an embedded finance platform. And what we mean by that is we help large financial services companies, manufacturers of financial services products, distribute those products via alternative channels of distribution, typically non-financial services companies who want to access those products via API. And we work with financial services product providers to combine their existing product shapes, innovate using a range of data services that we host, and make the combined proposition available, API web components and a white label front end to distribution partners. And in building that platform, what did we need to consider to make sure that it was scalable? And as I said, the life cycle of the various layers of the platform, yeah. those layers being the data layer, which yeah. for us was sort of fundamentally the sort of most important piece. We started in the life insurance space. A life insurance product typically has a term of 20 to 30 years. Yeah. You need to ensure that you've got a data model that is robust enough to stand the test of time and be able to support a policy whose duration has is forward looking towards that length of time. Similarly, the data model had to be able to scale. So we knew that we weren't just going to focus on life insurance or working with life insurance manufacturers. There were also general insurers and later credit products. So could that product architecture support not just a single product type, but could we make sure it was generic enough to support future product variations? So first layer, if you like, of the platform is that data layer, and that you need to be aware that that's going to have a life cycle of 5+, in our case, 20+ years. Second piece on sort of application layer side, sort of less frequently than on your user experience, but still semi-frequently, there are new technologies to enable you to enhance and scale your application layer. An example we have is moving from REST API to GraphQL as an example of sort of a new technology appeared around 3 to 5 years later, and we've had to update and move. So you understand the life cycle for your application layer is slightly lower than your data layer. And then finally, on the user experience, typically most platforms now use a React front end to ensure that your user experience layer is scalable. You've got to have a design system in place. So if you're adding new components, you're not designing everything from scratch. You've got a design system. You've got color schemes, button sizes, distances, and individual components can be reused in new UX architectures.
So this is interesting, right? So, these three layers that you have to look across, data, application, obviously customer or user. I mean, I guess part of the scaling challenge is making certain that obviously you get products to market or new features to market just sort of as quickly as possible. But, sometimes new features to market are challenging, right? Because they touch all three of these layers that you lay out. So, they touch data, i.e. what data needs to be updated to bring this new feature to market. And sometimes it is quite a large scale change, right? Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's more on the integration of that into the application. And then the other side of things is obviously the application you mentioned and also the customers. But what about outside factors such as maybe internal and outside factors such as regulation and maybe internal factors such as processes, right, that also need to be considered as you send out new features, you're scaling up your product. How have you guys sort of dealt with that, and what processes have you put in place to make certain that once you start moving forward on maybe new features or updating in existing enhancements, there is sort of a quick release cycle that can get products out to market at your pace?
Yeah, that's it's quite interesting. It's very relevant that you touch on the regulatory point, particularly for us as a business. We're supporting various different product types, as you said, from the most rigorously regulated in the life insurance space. We've also got general insurance, as we spoke about, and credit. We're not touching consumer credit, but nonetheless, we're in the SME space, and there's still a TCF piece there. So we're not just having to ensure that the software that we deploy is maintained and operational and has a high level of uptime, high level of performance. There's also, with platform changes, particularly on the front-end user experience side, are they in keeping with regulation? I mentioned TCF. That's quite a big piece. And one way that we manage that, particularly on... So maybe I'll take a step back.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, with distributing products on our platform, there are various different methods. There's distribution partners can access products via API. Mm-hmm. They can access products via web components and can access products via our white label front end. For the web components and the white label front end, we have a compliance built-in function so that when distribution partners are integrating one of our products, if they're using either of those two distribution methods, they won't need to be conscious of compliance requirements on their side, as we have done a review. And with every new release or update to those components, every new product added, we've done that review with the manufacturing partner to ensure that the way the product is being presented is compliant. And therefore, as soon as they integrate either a web component or embed that white label front end, they know that they will have a compliant customer journey. And similarly for us and our manufacturing partners, they know that as they scale distribution of their products across what might be 10, 20 or more distribution routes, each one of those implementations will be compliant. With an API integration, slightly harder to maintain that scalability. Hence, we've adjusted our charging model and appropriately to ensure that parties that do want to use the API will have that there's a sort of a templated systematic process for ensuring that those implementations are compliant.
I like it because you touched on a couple of things there. I'm going to pick up on one in particular. You talked about process. You talked about outbound process, actually, and one that's obviously very important in financial services space, which is around compliance. So you're doing the job of making certain your solution is compliant, and there's a process inside that that makes certain that whatever you send out to your customers, that solution is the best it can be. On the other side of the thing, you mentioned early on, you have operation and commercial alignment at the top of the shop. As you're rolling out new features and new enhancements into your ecosystem, how do you make certain that this process of rollout and communication across verticals inside your organization is understood? So there's new products that are going out, the commercial team, the sales team understand it, the marketing team understand it, they can market it, and operationally, the support team can support the new enhancements.
Yeah, great question. So I think if we go back to that first question, how the engineers of platform scale, we spoke technically on that piece, sort of operationally and commercially. If you're looking at that commercially, one thing that we have strived to achieve, and it has been challenging, is to have a repeatable sales process, which is templated as much as possible. Mm. So over time, we've been able to develop a playbook for product marketing, which has allowed us to, or sort of been built on as we've learned through experimentation. And I think that experimentation point is really key for being able to scale and having a wiki or area where you've recorded the various learnings. Actually, I'll come back onto that point of the wiki shortly. But I think, on scalable outbound processes, having some area where knowledge or learnings have been recorded and trying to extract that knowledge or new information in an experimental way means that you can continue to increment and improve on a sales process that at the outset would never have been the right thing to be doing. So we're consistently improving our sales process, the way that we market our products, the channels that are successful for the types of products that we're marketing. And in turn, all of those learnings, when recorded by the outbound team, are available internally, either for use in a presentation or as part of an accessible knowledge or wiki for existing employees, new employees, or elsewhere. I think on that point of having a wiki, that's one of my key operational pieces for being able to scale. I think we sort of heard it and read it before. If anyone in our organization is doing something twice, we're urged to write it down and give it a place in the wiki so that future employees, or particularly important when you're growing fast, so that future employees, new members coming into their team, won't have to go through the same journey that they've been through to understand how to perform an action or a function.
No, I think that's a great point. And, I know that going through, various clients and various sort of different organizations, having your wiki a place where people can go and get knowledge is paramount. And then also topping that up, right? Having those brown bag sessions where you go in, the sales team talk or the commercial team talks about how they're selling the product and what the customer feedback is. And, with inside that brown bag, there's everyone there, the developers, the marketers, the CEO, et cetera. So everyone gets a very, very good understanding of market news, of what's going on. And it's just that extra extension outside of, the wiki or the knowledge hub.
I think just to build on that, we definitely see it as a two-way process in our organization. And we try to put the relevant all hands or team meetings in place to do that. So we operate an agile framework. We have a 3-week sprint cycle. At the end of every sprint, we'll have a demo of the new features that have been released by the product team. Nice. For the entire organization. So business understands which new product features are available. They don't have to rely on those features being documented and going to read the documentation. There's also a sort of in-person group presentation. And similarly on the business side, particularly if we've got new features that are either in beta or R&D and they're being tested with current or existing clients, or we've built something for a new client that hasn't yet been adopted by the broader market, the business and sales teams will be able to feed back to the product teams in their own session, sort of as to how those products are being perceived. And in turn, that will help fuel the backlog for incremental enhancements to the various products that we have.
We're actually talking about prioritizing requirements or enhancements, whatever we want to talk about, or whatever, however you want to phrase it, right? And, you know, there seems to be a process there that involves not only tech, but also, you know, the business, the commercial side, and maybe also the operational team, to make certain that, you know, the company is involved in the evolution of the product, not just, you know, a siloed tech team or dev team that thinks certain products or certain new releases are good. And how does that prioritization actually take place? I know you guys have an agile methodology. There's a 3-week sprint cycle, but what drives the success of your new releases and those requirements that fit into those new releases?
Again, good question. We have we operate the 3-week sprint cycle ahead of each sprint. So a week, 2 weeks prior, we'll have prioritization meeting. So we're regularly prioritizing our backlog in line with sort of 6 to 12 month forward looking strategy. So backlog has been developed in line with sort of forward looking, maybe 6 months or so. And then in prioritizing that backlog, we use a simple stack rank of epics and stories. We say simple stack rank, the sort of semi-complex logic that's used to in that prioritization decision. And over time, as our organization has evolved, you've got different weightings. We weight slightly differently to external client requirements versus backlog items that have been produced internally by our product managers. In the early days, as our platform was just forming and we set our strategic vision wasn't so informed by the market, backlog would be weighted 80% to features sort of being developed internally, being thought about internally. Whereas now, where we're slightly more market driven, we're in a growth stage, we've got products that are growing and need incrementing on and enhancing, you might have 60% weighting to external client requirements, and therefore they take a higher priority than some of the things that are coming up internally. We'll always reserve some capacity for hardening, continuous improvement, operational resilience, those pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's been very interesting for us how our requirements and prioritization has shifted from being informed internally to being informed by external interaction with the market.
Interesting, because you want market feedback. I mean, has the transition meant that there's greater demand for your product as a result of you guys being, I don't want to say more in tune, because obviously, you know, maybe that's the wrong terminology, but maybe taking market feedback more so than you were at the start?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think one great learning for us as an organization is utilize market feedback as much as possible. The market knows best about what they want, not you as an organization. We somewhat arrogantly, I think early on, would lean to developing solutions that we believe the market was after. Whereas over time, over the lifetime of our business, we've spent a lot more time building customer personas, understanding our customer base through focus groups, ensuring that we're taking learnings from a broader cross-section of the market, not just our closest and earliest customers, and making sure that we're taking up a broader view and being much more informed by the market.
Yeah, nice.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
As we finish up and wrap up this section of the podcast, what advice would you like to give to those sort of founders, fintech leaders out there that are developing their product and might be at an inflection point and thinking, okay, how they can sort of scale up their product. What are the things that, or the factors or the aspirations, what should they be thinking about as they really build out that product stack? What are the two or three bits of advice that you want to give them?
I think that, as I divided it at the beginning, so taking the various, or when you're strategizing around growing the product, I think, as we said, there are technical considerations, operational considerations, commercial considerations. I think investing time at outset or ahead of a sort of new strategic direction, if you're looking to take a new strategic direction or you're moving into a new phase of growth, investing time at outset to ensure that you've got, we spoke about it previously, but you've got a well-structured knowledge base in place would be one, a repeatable sales process, which uses or takes or gives precedence to market interaction would be two, and ensuring that your technology stack, particularly your data model and data layer, is scalable, i.e. has a generic architecture which will allow you to expand in the way that you'd want to over time.
Nice. I like it. Some really good tips there. And, you know, now we go into the next part of the show, which is a bit more fun. I'm not allowed to say a bit of fun because someone said to me the other day, what? I was talking for 30 minutes. You think that wasn't fun? So I'm not allowed to say it anymore. So there we go. So it's a bit more fun. What we do is it's the flash round. I ask Luke three quick questions, yes or no answers. And then I flip the mic around and Luke sits in the hot seat and asks me a question. So here we go. Drum roll, please. Okay. First question, what do you consider the best way to grow a business, through a community or through the best product?
I think if you'd asked me that question when we started Secure, I'd say through the best product.
Yeah.
I think if you ask me that now, it's a much closer call and potentially I'm leaning towards community.
Oh, interesting. There we go. What is the best tool to manage your software development lifecycle? Okay, so I had to think of a word there. Is it managing it through a backlog or is it a requirements traceability matrix?
I'm going to lean on what we do at Secure and say managing through a backlog.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, and then the next one, I think I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to ask you anyway, what is the best development methodology? Are we looking at, I'm going to give you two options, and there's more than two, but I'm going to give you two options. Are we waterfall or are we agile?
I'd say it's an interesting, agile, obviously, given our stage. If you're at outset, there's nothing wrong with waterfall methodology to get your initial platform build sorted.
I like
we it. Started there, moved to agile once we had got the fundamental framework in place.
I like it because that's actually important, right? Because you touched on an important thing, because waterfall at least gives you some focus, right? And allows you to get stuff done and deliver things. And then obviously agile, you know your product, you know your team, and things can get a bit quicker because you've got that foundation set up. So yeah, I really like the way you answered that. And
exactly. As long as you've got a sensible foundation in mind.
Yeah.
It's great. If you're being too ambitious, if you hit a waterfall, you will lose that visibility that you have with Agile throughout the development lifecycle. Yeah.
I like it. And now, my friend, is something that I'm sure you've been waiting for ages. Yeah, you finally get the chance to ask me a question. I always say that everyone laughs. What's going on, man? So here we go. I give you the mic and you can ask me anything you like.
Actually, it's one for me and us, selfishly, it's a joke, Richard. So you've interviewed many fintech leaders on your podcast. If you could pull out maybe one or two of the most mentioned factors for scale that they see as being important for scale, what would they be?
One is community, definitely. Through every single podcast that I've done, so you know, over 10,000 hours worth of podcasting, 128 episodes, every single leader, or maybe a couple, has said community. A community is the way to grow your product and to grow your company. Actually, rather say grow your product, to grow your company. So that's one thing. The other thing is communication. being able to communicate to your public on a consistent basis. And when I say your public, I don't just mean the people that you work with on a day in, day out basis. I mean everyone, right? So who's your public? Your investors, your potential prospects, your current clients, your partners, your future employees. Because if you're able to communicate to these folk consistently, things are going to be much, much easier when you go into scaling up and also maybe hyper growth. So from an employee perspective, people actually reach in and want to work with you. You know, investors are going to want to reach in and help you get to that desired location. And obviously on the employee side of things, we're all going to be in sync as to where we're going and how we're going about it. So yeah, those two factors, I think community and consistent communication has come through as two of the factors that allow companies to really accelerate to where they want to go.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. Second point on communication is it's something we didn't touch on here, but it's something that we assign high priority to secure, and it's fundamental in allowing any product or business to scale.
And it's a big one, because even, I mean, you mentioned earlier on, you guys are out in the field and you're doing some sales stuff and you are iterating and you're putting things back into a wiki. You're putting things back into either, it's a, you know, maybe it's a video, a 1 minute or 2 minute video by your sales director who had just had a chat with, you know, someone, and he knows he should have done or she should have done something, and they record that, they put it onto the wiki. All of a sudden, that information is golden, right? And what's happening? You got, you know, you're communicating to your, in this instance, obviously to your team. And that is just vital. That's just a little drop in the ocean. And then there's other bits that allow this, allow other parts of the communication dynamic to really explode if you continue along that vein. Yeah, super vital in all aspects. Okay, so I really enjoyed that. Brilliant show today. As I say to all guests, how can folk reach out and, you know, either chat with you or the team?
So I'm on luke@secure.io. I'm pretty active at responding to email, so I'm always open to questions. And otherwise, just head to our website, find out a bit more about us, and we'd be very happy to book in a meeting if you want to know more.
Brilliant. And really, really enjoy the show today. Looking forward to your guys' continued expansion and growth. And listen, I'm going to have to invite you back to another show, and maybe we can chat and go into depth on communication specifically and see how that plays out from a scaling perspective.
Sure. That'd be great. Thanks, Richard. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Awesome, mate.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.